Hello, this is Julia Shopik introducing The Keeper, Inc.'s first installment of its audio interview show, which will air at www.keeper.com, the official website of the manufacturer of the Keeper and Moon Cup reusable menstrual cups. For this series, we will be interviewing people who we feel are making significant contributions to the environment and to people's health. We are proud to have as our very first guest the award-winning journalist Simran Sethi of treehugger.com, which is the largest environmental site on the internet with 750,000 visitors per month. And treehugger.com is also the recipient of the 2006 Vloggy Award for the best green vlog. A vlog, by the way, is a video blog. In March of 2006, Simran was hired to expand Treehugger's then-fledgling video division, Treehugger TV, and create unique news content. She has evolved into one of the faces of Treehugger, hosts a weekly audio podcast on Air America and on the Internet, and continues to oversee the growth of Treehugger Video. Today, Simran will tell us more about Treehugger.com and its sister eco-sites, Treehugger TV, and if we have time, Hug.com. But first, I want to tell you just a little bit about Simran. I first learned about Simran when she contacted The Keeper, Inc. about including our company's reusable menstrual cup, The Keeper, as one of the products to present during her upcoming appearance on The Martha Stewart Show. Of course, we were delighted, so I sent her samples of The Keeper, as well as samples of our new silicone version, The Moon Cup. As I watched Simran on television, I was so impressed with the self-assured representative of the environment and of eco-friendly living that I approached her about being Keeper.com's first audio interview guest. Turns out that there's a reason that Simran impressed me on The Martha Stewart Show. She has an extensive background in both environmentalism and television. She has produced and anchored the news for MTV Asia, co-created the MTV India News Division, and developed programming for the BBC through her independent production company, SheTV. She hosted Ethical Markets, a magazine-style series that highlights sustainable business practices and corporate social responsibility. It's currently airing on PBS and Lime TV. She's also a contributing author of the forthcoming book, Ethical Markets, Growing the Green Economy. Simran holds an MBA in Sustainable Management and a BA in Sociology and Women's Studies. In her spare time, and I'm not sure she has much spare time, Simran dedicates herself to media advocacy, serving on the board of directors for the National Radio Project, and until her recent move from New York to Lawrence, Kansas, was on the advocacy board for New York's National Public Radio affiliate, WNYC. She is also passionate about food justice and hopes to develop a nutrition and food justice curriculum in her new community of Lawrence, Kansas. She ran a similar program in Harlem prior to moving to the Midwest. Simran, I hope I didn't put you to sleep, but I thought that was one of the most interesting bios. I couldn't leave a word out. How are you today?
Julia, you're very kind. I'm doing really well, and I'm honored to be your first audio interview for this series. Thank you.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you. I understand you're putting together some information for Oprah. You must be just so excited.
Yes, we'll see what happens there, but I think what that demonstrates is just how much green is moving into the mainstream. Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth will be released on DVD this coming Tuesday. We're launching a contest to coincide with that on solutions to global warming. Eco-fashion is hitting the runways. People increasingly speak about the need for organic and healthier food, looking at our reliance on fossil fuels and trying to wean ourselves off that. I think from the White House to people's backyards, people are really now waking up to the need to be more environmentally sensitive and active.
You know, I totally agree with you, but I have to tell you that I think you're a bit too modest. The reason I'm saying that is I did a little research, as I know you knew I would, before interviewing you, and I was stunned by the amount of advocacy that Treehugger does. I mentioned to you before this interview, you know, about how I was stunned. I hate to keep using that word, and it's not a common one in my lexicon. But you not only have treehugger.com, you've got treehuggertv.com, Treehugger Radio, which of course is in conjunction with Air America And you've got hug.com, which is like dig.com, and letting people put articles about eco-friendliness on the site and people vote for it. My point is that you are everywhere, and I'm totally, totally impressed. So if you
feel blessed. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you know something? I know that you feel blessed to be involved with it, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, TreeHugger is the largest pure environmental site on the web, as you indicated. We've got a lot of traffic. The site was actually founded by a dear friend and colleague and my boss, Graham Hill, who a few years ago really started off just with a logo for TreeHugger as a design project. He studied architecture and design in Canada and was encouraged by a friend of his, Nick Denton, who heads up the Gawker blog and all the Gawker conglomerate, to really look at creating a blog on environmentalism that would be what we call hip, not hippie. So something that would be accessible to people, something that would not present environmentalism as, you know, relentless gloom and doom, but really look at the opportunities that these kind of sort of the use of our natural resources presents to us. Recognize that we can be environmentalists, each and every one of us in our own way, and that we can do this in ways that are financially accessible, beautifully designed, and fun.
Well, it certainly is all of that. But how in heaven did he come up with all of these different ideas? He takes advantage, or you guys take advantage of the television, the radio. You take advantage. It is a multimedia site. I hope you don't mind my referring to it that way. But
absolutely not. We really are striving to. I think I joined TreeHugger about 9 months ago, and Graham had at that point been interested in working in video but hadn't really devoted a lot of time or energy to it. So he'd hired an independent production company called Missing Pieces to sort of get everything started. And then I came in to really help refine the productions, build production value, expand our roster of producers. And during that time, we also started discussing the opportunities that exist in radio. It's a medium that I really believe in. I'm a huge fan of radio, National Public Radio in particular, and I really saw a lot of opportunity there. So I've really worked very closely with Graham to help grow the TreeHugger blog into what we call now the TreeHugger Media Company.
TreeHugger Media Company. It's absolutely incredible. By the way, I'd like to tell our listeners that you can access all of this by going on to TreeHugger, spelled exactly like it sounds, treehugger.com. And the other is treehuggertv.com. But frankly, if you just go to treehugger.com, there'll be links to everything else, including to hug.com. But I spent some time listening to and viewing your TV and radio spots. They're so professional. He must have hired top-of-the-line people to do the technical.
You know, we have been very fortunate to work with, for the TV side of things, producers who have backgrounds as diverse as coming from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy to being independent filmmakers, and they have really raised the bar on what TreeHugger TV is and can be. I'm extraordinarily proud of the team's efforts and of the vloggy that we just received for Best Green Vlog. On the radio side, you know, it's funny. It looks like it would be done by a lot of people, but again, I'm really fortunate to work with a very talented producer named Jacob Gordon, who is also a TreeHugger writer and edits our green guides, and he is, you know, he's just phenomenal. So neither one of us had a background in radio per se. I had hosted a radio program in college, but aside from that, this is new territory for us, but we've worked with EcoTalk to develop a segment that we're really proud of.
Well, you should be proud of them. I don't even know how you get all those different people. For instance, you got Lori David, I believe.
Lori David was the first audio interview that TreeHugger has ever done. And that was, I really, before we even decided on radio, we were in the throes of launching, or developing at that point, we're launching soon, a contest on user-created responses to climate change. So videos that are created by our readers, by the public at large, that really bring to us the solutions to climate change. We call it Convenient Truths. Lori was selected as one of our judges, and she very kindly agreed to be our first audio interview. So over the course of the next few months, we'll be completing those interviews with environmental luminaries like Hunter Lovins, Jerome Ringo, of course, Lori David, Cameron Sinclair, and so on. So it's been a tremendous opportunity, and if people are interested in hearing those those audio interviews in full, they will be featured on the treehugger.com contest site, which you can find by going to the treehugger.com homepage and clicking on contest.
When are the interviews going to be starting? I did miss that, so forgive me.
Not at all. No, you wouldn't have known because the site hasn't actually gone what we call live yet.
Okay.
We're in the process of building it now. We've featured excerpts of some of those interviews in the radio segments we've done so far. So I have already interviewed Lisa Renstrom from the Sierra Club, Bob Perkowitz from Eco America, Lori David, Jerome Ringo. We're just now getting started. We did a quick interview with Hunter Lovins that will be expanded. So those you can listen to portions of those in our audio podcast, or you can go to either treehugger.com and click on contest, or go to directly to the URL, which is truths.treehugger.com.
Truths with an S on it?
Yeah.
.treehugger.com. Okay, what I want to do is I'm going to be creating links to all of these from the Keeper's website, keeper.com. So as you know, we have links to several, Treehugger TV, hug.com, but I want to get links to all of these. So I may call you sometime this week to make sure I have everything correct, or just send you the links. You know, when you say you're blessed to be part of this, part of what I see going on with Treehugger is an incredible sense of marketing and a sense of what people are interested in. For instance, one of my other favorite sites, and I say other because you definitely are one of mine, is Slate.com. And, of course, before I knew it, I was finding out about your collaboration with Slate, which is going on right now. Is that correct?
It sure is. We have a really exciting challenge that's going on Slate right now. It is called the Slate Green Challenge, and what we've done is really helps people to look at what we call our carbon footprint. So as again, there's this growing concern around global warming, we can really look at sort of like the individual imprint that each of us creates through the carbon emissions that we generate. And that is through our energy usage, the kinds of transportation that we use, the kinds of food even that we buy. So the Slate Green Challenge is really designed to help you look methodically at the kinds of things that you're engaging in and learn more about how to, what we call, go on a carbon diet and lose hundreds of pounds in emissions per year.
And that has to do, I believe, each week has a different project?
Exactly. Each week, everything relating from food to transportation and so on. Megan O'Neill is our very talented writer who's leading up this effort. And you know, she's really taking you through step by step what you need to do to really reduce your carbon footprint over the span of 8 weeks.
Well, I think that's absolutely wonderful. One thing that I probably should have said in the intro but didn't is that I wonder if you know this, that Treehugger is one of Technorati's top 100. I believe it's one of the top 50 sites.
Yes. And yes. We're definitely in the top 75, and I think
you're in the top 50.
So, yeah, great.
So does that mean you went up?
It would mean we went up, yes.
Well, I was absolutely, that was absolutely wonderful. What are your plans for, do you have any immediate plans for both Treehugger TV and Treehugger Radio that you can tell us about?
Well, what we're really striving to do is, you know, inspired by the kind of response we've gotten so far from our readers, is move more towards showing people how to do this. We've done that, of course, on our blog, you know, highlighting products and services that people can avail of to become more environmentally responsible. What we've learned in particular through the Slate Challenge, the Slate Green Challenge, is that people are really hungry for this kind of information on exactly how to go about greening their life. What the editor of Slate actually told us was he had never seen this kind of response to, you know, mitigating our environmental impacts and reducing global warming. So right now there are nearly 27,000 people signed up for the Slate Green Challenge. We're also in the process of building that Jacob Gordon is overseeing a series of green guides for Treehugger that really show people, you know, how to green your wardrobe, how to green your transportation, how to green your home energy use, and so on. And then simultaneously on the Treehugger TV side, we're really going to be focusing our videos on capitalizing on that idea of really showing people through a visual medium how to go green.
That's wonderful. Do you feel that Treehugger, I noticed, of course, that you were on the Martha Stewart Show, and you're now talking with Oprah and all that. Do you feel that what the internet is doing, what you and some other eco sites are doing, is going to influence the mainstream media and that they'll be doing more? I noticed that Leonardo DiCaprio will be having an environmental TV show that he's working on now.
He's working to, you know, green a whole town. His show is Etopia, and we're really excited to see how that turns out. I think when there are celebrities such as Leonardo DiCaprio and Daryl Hannah and Ed Begley Jr. And George Clooney taking a stand and saying, we need to turn this tide, it really is inspiring to people. And for me, what's inspiring is seeing my colleagues at, you know, Ideal Bite and at Grist, which are two of my favorite environmental sites, also really leading this charge. So depending on what kind of information you want, there's room for lots of voices in this green space on the web. But what I think we're seeing more and more is that the integration between broadcast and broadband. So as mainstream television outlets start to approach some of the green sites, including Treehugger, about really supporting their effort, it expands the reach of this kind of information, and it really shows that this is part of the public discourse.
I agree with you, and I salute you in what you're doing. Tell me a little bit about your interest in food justice and the projects that you were doing in Harlem, you were conducting in Harlem, and that you're planning for Lawrence, Kansas, and your interest in this.
Absolutely. One of the things that I really go back to is something actually Lori David said to me in the interview that I did with her, was the idea that, reiterating what actually Robert Kennedy Jr. had said, that environmentalism is a civil right. Access to clean air, access to healthy food shouldn't be something that's relegated to an elite population. And what we find in the United States in particular, I mean, actually all over the world, I shouldn't say just in the U.S., just speaking specifically about what's going on here, there's a disproportionate amount of public health concerns, environmental degradation in areas that tend to be urban and poor. So for me, living in Harlem, New York, I really saw all around me the impacts of the lack of access to healthy food. And I believe that food is something, you know, we sort of turned our sort of connection to food into something like this, which is food is fuel, food is quick, food is also problematic. You know, we're constantly going on diets, constantly trying to cut down the consumption of food, surrendering with guilt to fat-laden foods, unhealthy foods, and then also, you know, trying to eat really quickly. The consumption, the way we treat food is as something that is not necessarily nourishing for us, but that just fuels us to do more and more. And, you know, I think that to me, food is really sacred. To sit down at the table with somebody, to make a meal with someone, to break bread, can really open up the opportunity for tremendous communion. And looking at sort of what I see in Harlem, where there are more beauty parlors and liquor stores than actual grocery stores, you know, I see a real challenge there. So my goal in developing a curriculum was to really say, what kinds of things can we do to use the resources we have, whether they're food stamps, whether they're recipes, whether it's within the grocery stores that we already have, to start eating in a more healthful way? And then what can we do externally to really encourage the creation of community-supported agriculture in low-income neighborhoods, to, you know, encourage the distribution of more healthful foods in these currently existing grocery stores? My colleague, Bram Amadi, with whom I attended Presidio School of Management, where I got my MBA in sustainable management, is the executive director of People's Grocery, which really has been tremendous inspiration.
Excuse me, People's Grocery?
People's Grocery. It's a nonprofit based in West Oakland, California, just outside of San Francisco. And its goal is to create a sustainable and just food system. And what they mean by that is really providing access to healthy food for all. So that includes going into the community, teaching people how to grow their own food in urban gardens, bringing organic food and healthy food into the community. They actually have a biodiesel van that blares hip-hop music and that goes through the community. So rather than having the community members have to seek out the food, they actually are bringing the food to the community members to help educate them and encourage them to eat in a more healthful way. So he's my inspiration in this regard, just by saying, you know, this is something that we all really should have a right to have, and there are really ingenious ways of doing it to meet people where they are, and to make information about nutrition and to actually provide food in a really accessible way.
Didn't Alice Waters do something with this in California?
She's another inspiration. Alice Waters created the Chez Panisse Foundation, and under that, she's created the Edible Schoolyard. So actually, that is going into schools, teaching children, you know, children who at this point may think that tomatoes grow in plastic containers in the grocery store rather than in the ground, and helping them to use gardening and food as teaching and learning tools. So calculating, you know, a growth cycle, a harvest cycle, learning how to cook the food, understanding the biochemical responses of the soil and so on. So really helping kids to understand that this is another way of learning. And by teaching them in this really engaged way, encouraging them to eat healthier foods.
And what do we do about the schools? You mentioned the schools. What they serve there is just, in general, pretty awful, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm heartened by what Bill Clinton is doing as part of the Clinton Foundation, which is addressing the poor nutrition in schools. I think, you know, it's particularly discouraging for me when I see what children are fed, children who may be on meal plans getting free meals. You know, that food isn't the kind of thing that's going to keep them healthy and energized throughout the day. And when you have children skipping meals or eating poor meals, that creates a cycle whereby they're not going to learn as much as they can. They're not going to have the opportunities that they could have if they don't learn. So I really believe that providing access to healthy food is a fundamental step in helping people move out of poverty and really explore a lot of options that may not be available when you're too hungry or too distracted or too sugared up to, you know, to concentrate.
Well, this sounds terrific. As you know, the Keeper is a reusable menstrual cup, and I noticed that you have a lot of articles about the Keeper or mentioning the Keeper on your site. But I thought of a project we might work on together. May I tell you about it?
Please.
Carolyn Maloney, who is a congresswoman from New York, has mm-hmm. been trying to get the Tampon Safety and Research Act through for many years. The date on the last version, I believe, is 1997, and I will send you a link to it. I was just thinking while preparing for talking with you, what a great thing it would be if maybe you could interview her and I could interview her separately, and we could promote the two interviews and try to get basically what this act is doing. All she's trying to do is to educate women about the potential dangers of feminine hygiene products and to give them accurate information in order to make correct decisions. And she's also trying to make it so that there is an independent testing going on to see whether these products that are being sold so much to women are dangerous or not. And this seems to be something that the men in Congress are not that interested in. So I was thinking that maybe we could join together to help her.
I think that sounds like a great project. We're just about to launch our contest, so I'm a little myopic until then.
Okay.
But I'd love to talk to you about it further after that time.
That sounds really, really good. And I didn't mean, I'm sorry if I sprung it on you. But now that I have met you, I'm thinking of all the different kinds of things out there that, because you're doing a fantastic job. I'm hoping that you do get to go on Oprah. Is that part of what you think may happen?
Thank you. No promises, no assurances whatsoever. The show did contact us for some basic research information that we've been trying to put together, and we're just, you know, we're so excited to hear about a television program like Oprah Winfrey, like Martha Stewart, like Rachel Ray, reaching out and wanting to know more about going green, because, you know, the more information we can provide, I think the greater opportunity to really reach people who may not know as much as they could. And, you know, we're just honored that they reached out to us. So wherever it leads, it'll be a good place.
Well, I just decided that I'm going to write to her in that segment about, you know, ideas for shows. I know that they are going to be doing another show on Eco. That I learned that from your site. And I'm going to write to her and say that I think you should be a guest on it.
Oh, well, thank you.
So, anyway, I am thrilled to have been able to interview you. I know that your time is very, very short today, so I'm honored that you have taken the time to talk with me. And I hope that we'll be talking several times. I would love to do more interviews with you.
And I would love to do that as well. I thank you so much. I'm sorry that we only had a half an hour today, but I hope that we'll be able to speak.
Did I do well on the time?
You were amazing. It's 4:30 on the dot. That's extraordinary.
Well, I try to do things that, you know, to fit everything in. I don't know if I did, so I'm hoping that we can talk again.
Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia.
I'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.